the packed dogs that come into our prison, they've shown me more love than I've had in the rest of my life.
Welcome to The Consult Room, the podcast that celebrates pets and people. I'm Dr. Paul Mangtalo. I'm a veterinary surgeon with a passion for the rich insights and stories about pets in the modern world that we live. Whether you're a pet owner, a pet professional, or you just love hearing about pets, then this is the space for you. I love hearing about how pets can help people. So I'm fascinated to learn more about a scheme that takes volunteer pets into prisons to help with the rehabilitation of inmates, a scheme so successful that it now operates in 28 prisons across the UK. I think this sounds fantastic, and anyone that owns a pet, including myself, will testify that they can bring so much companionship and can help people suffering from loneliness and social isolation. But where could be lonelier than a prison, where, of course, many privileges, including the ability to share your life with a pet, have been taken away from you? I'm really looking forward to this podcast and to hear more about this amazing scheme. I'll be joined today by Matt Robinson from the Pet as Therapy charity to explore how this scheme works and how prisoners can benefit from the presence of pets. Matt, welcome to the Consult Room. It is great to have you on the show.
Thank you so much for inviting me on, Paul. It's great to be here.
So, Matt, I want to dive straight in to this scheme and the concept behind it. So where did the idea come from to send pets into prisons?
I think in general, obviously, Pets as Therapy, we have volunteers that register with their own pets. And if you can summarise it, it's them sharing the love and companionship of their own animals with other people that otherwise wouldn't be able to benefit. And of course, prisons is no exception to that. You have people that are, you know, paying their time to society by being socially isolated. So, you know, to bring in another living organism that can spend some time with them and help them during that process is ultimately the goal of the prison visiting exercise.
So what kind of prisons do you visit in this work?
There's actually a whole host of prisons. So for those people that maybe were like myself before I started getting involved in this, there's a whole different categorisation of prisons depending on the severity of the crime, the type of sentence that they're having to spend. So you go from all the way from open prisons, which is where, or sometimes known as day release, all the way up to category A, maximum security. And we have a volunteering visiting service in each of those categories across the UK.
Now, through your work in Pets as Therapy, I know that your volunteers visit a number of different places like hospitals, hospices, care homes. But prisons, for me, feels like a slightly different kind of concept. So did you have to break down stigmas at all with either people who support the charity or from your volunteers to start this work off?
I think that's a really good question, Paul. So from my understanding, prison visiting through Pets as Therapy actually began back in 1997. And with the best will in the world, it wasn't on my radar then. I was still at high school. However, it has grown in popularity since then. And we very much have two different models of visiting that I think we're going to come on to later. But coming back to your original question, I think you can describe a prison visiting service as a bit of a Marmite topic. There are those that, and I'm going to make a stereotype here, maybe they haven't stepped foot in a prison before. So they don't understand what the setting is like and what those people are actually going through. And let's not forget, they are people, which is very much along the lines of punishment. They deserve it. That's why they're here. And then there's the newer way of thinking, which is actually that the prison system should be rehabilitative, with the ultimate view of, well, what do we want these people to be like when they do finally get released? Do we want them to be broken shells of people that have literally just been made to suffer throughout that time? or do we want them to be valued members of society, contributing to society because they've been possibly educated for the first time, possibly shown love for the first time, companionship, all of these things, again, that we take for granted if we come from a loving, warm family background that potentially these people have never had. And that for me was very much the moment that I kind of viewed prisons in a new way. And that's why I'm really keen to promote this prison visiting service that we have.
I mean, it sounds on the face of it like an incredibly positive thing to do. But when you first approached prisons, you said there about the two different models of how people think prisoners should be treated, I guess, in a way. When you approach prisons, are they all on board with what you're saying or offering, or do you get some resistance?
I would say, for the most part, yeah, the prisons are on board. And I genuinely can't think of a single time where I've spoken to somebody when we're doing the scoping exercise about, you know, is it for them, where they haven't also found it incredibly interesting and wanted to learn more. Now, as I said, we do have the two different models of visiting, which we are going to outline. But either way, it's ultimately the same thing. It's a person and their own pet, bringing the pet in to the prison to bring that companionship to people. So no, I haven't met any barriers, really, other than sometimes they're maybe not the right person to initially have a conversation with. It has to go to a higher level to get approval. There are two models, so Model A and Model B. Model A is the older version that I was talking about that's been running since about 1997 and still running today. And that's where let's call them a regular Pets Therapy volunteer. So a member of the public that registers with Pets Therapy and ultimately chooses their local prison as an establishment that they want to be able to visit. So they will go through a process of having a DBS check or background check on themselves. They will be inducted into the prison so they understand how it works. They will also have to apply for gate passes. So typically they would be visiting maybe once a month, not on a regular basis to the prison. Model B has developed out of Model A, and it was actually developed in conjunction with G4S prisons. We first launched it at HMP Ryhill up near Rugby. And ultimately, we're now registering prison staff members with their own dogs. So that could be admin staff, that could be frontline officers. And the benefits of that over Model A is that, firstly, they understand how the prison system works. Mm-hmm. They're not afraid of the prison environment. They already have the relevant background checks. They have often access to keys so that they can move around the prison freely. And the prison itself gets much more frequent visits as a result. So the service is delivered across a much wider range of people and to more people day in, day out.
It's really interesting talking through the two different models. But I just wanted to go back to the older model, the Model A, which I believe you still have in some locations. Mm. I'm just interested to hear the volunteer that approaches you with a pet that wants to use in this sort of therapy and chooses to go into a prison rather than some of your other kind of work, for example, in hospitals, care homes, hospices. Why do they want to go into a prison?
It's a pretty good question, Paul. The first prison I ever went into was HMP Wayland in Norfolk. And we have a fantastic lady called Karen. And she is a volunteer area coordinator for Pets Therapy. I think, in fact, you've probably met her at one or two of our events. She is the most lovely lady. She's got the biggest heart. She volunteers for other organisations as well. So she just wants to help people in need. And she, although she doesn't have pat dogs herself, she helps coordinate other volunteers for us. And I went along to this prison, never set foot in a prison before. And all of these people had something in common, which was that they just wanted to go along and talk to people. They didn't want to know what they'd done. There was no judgment involved. They were literally just there to share the love of their animal. So it didn't matter where they were doing it. Now, that being said, those people had obviously been there before, so they knew what to expect. There are some volunteers that, of course, say, oh, I'd really like to visit my local prison. But maybe after visit one, they think, actually, this isn't, I'm not comfortable here. This isn't right for me. Or, in fact, this isn't right for my dog. You know, the dog might not like the environment. So both factors have to be taken into account. And that's the same for any visit that we do. For some reason, certain dogs or certain volunteers don't like a given setting. They don't, you know, enjoy it, or they don't get anything from it themselves. There has to be a joy to volunteering as well.
This episode is sponsored by Superdog from Vitabiotics, the UK's number one vitamin company. As a vet, I would always encourage a healthy, balanced diet for your dog. But like us, all dogs are different. So giving a vitamin supplement can act as an insurance policy to make sure you're meeting your dog's nutritional needs. Superdog's chewable, tasty braised beef tablets are packed with over 21 nutrients, expertly formulated for your special companion. Superdog's available now at Amazon, Ocado, Paws, and Vitabiotics.com. It's really interesting what you said there about the no judgment piece, because that just immediately made me think about how our pets are with us. You know, yeah. They interact with us with completely no judgment. So from my mind, you know, for example, a dog going into a prison would not understand or have any judgment around the people in that environment compared to a care home. So it's that completely no judgment. So you have to have, really, the volunteer has to have the same mentality almost. So it's like the dog leading the volunteer, isn't it, in that kind of scenario.
Yeah, I think I've heard some people, Paul, say we should be more dog.
I think I say that all the time. Although Rodney does get himself into some situations that I wouldn't want to be in.
Yeah, not all dog, just maybe a bit more dog.
Being a one-year-old terrier. So I can kind of understand the benefits of each model, but going to this more modern model where staff, you know, take their own pets in, which I can see is great because, you know, they've got access and they know the system and all that kind of stuff. But I was just wondering, does it help to improve the relationship between the member of staff and the inmates, the fact that they brought their dog in with them?
100%. And actually, it was something that I don't think we had ever really planned on. It just kind of grew organically. Very early on in the newer model, and the model B of visiting, we were getting reports back from the guys over at Rye Hill, just saying, you know, this is just phenomenal, because the reactions that they're getting sometimes from what they call them, residents, is incredibly positive. So much more communicative. They value the fact that these officers are bringing something very personal into the prison. And it's obviously for the benefit of those residents. So, they just weren't really prepared for that, I don't think. And it's now something that we obviously mention when we're talking to new prisons coming on board, because, again, they hadn't envisaged that would be something that would come out of it. It's always seen as just, you know, the service that you're delivering and not the bits that go on around it.
So my experience of prisons is very much limited to what you watch on TV. I don't have a huge amount of experience in there, but I'm just wondering whether, you know, if a member of staff brings their dog in and demonstrates that they want to have a more positive relationship with the residents of the prison, if that would culturally improve everybody's perception of the people in the prison and make everybody want to do more to help them. Do you find that?
Yeah, I think it's probably a fair assumption that would happen. I mean, we've now been visiting, we've had staff registered and visiting at Rye Hill for, it's got to be coming up to 4 years. And whenever I go in to that prison, I've been back a few times, it's a very warm reception. Not just from the staff that I've registered, the other admin staff from the offices that we walk through, but also the resident population. I've been back for awards, and it's just incredibly positive. People are polite. Now, don't get me wrong, I'm not saying that they never have issues. I think with any tight community where you're rubbing up against each other and can't escape, you know, if you've had a bad day and it's that person that's close in close proximity to you, you're still going to have those issues that we can generally avoid because actually we can just give a bit of space. They can't. But when I do go in, it just feels reasonably pleasant. Whereas when you visit maybe a prison that's just come on board and hasn't been having you know the visits from the animals, it can often feel still, you know, a little bit uncomfortable. I don't know where I should be standing. I don't have any recognition within the prison. No one knows who I am. So yeah, I think it certainly can have its benefits. One thing that always amazes me, and this is across any sorts of visits, is that the benefit to the other staff members as well. So let's not forget, staff members within a prison can also have a bad day. They might witness something, they might have loads of work pressure, but actually they've got access to the same animals that the residents would do. So they can spend a bit of time with them and de-stress and have a little cuddle with them. And it's just a wonderful benefit to all people.
And there's so much research now, isn't there? That it's undeniable, isn't it? That, you know, the presence of or interacting with an animal can reduce anxiety, can reduce your blood pressure, all those things that are signs of a stressful day. And, you know, any company that's letting dogs go into the office, I think is, you know, a good place to work in my
Yeah,
book.
absolutely. And I think anyone who's ever owned, I don't know if that's the right phrase now, owned an animal. So for the purpose of this, let's say a dog or a cat, you know, if you've had a bad day, if you've had a relationship problem, if you've had stress at work, if you've had a bad day at school, whatever it may be, whatever age you're at, inherently the dog just seems to know and comes and positions itself next to you as if to say, it's all right. You're going to be fine. It might rest its little chin on your leg, depending on its size, or it might snuggle up to you. And it's just those little things that just brings you down from whatever. And you might have a moan at it because it doesn't care. It just listens.
Having any preconceptions about the environment in a prison, I think it's safe to say that any place where you're having freedoms taken away from you can lead to a greater sense of social isolation and loneliness, which could affect the way that you interact with people. You can immediately see, can't you, how the presence of an animal can diffuse a situation or become a talking point for people or become that area of commonality that allows you to communicate better. Because I see that, you know, even in a veterinary context, when somebody comes into a veterinary practice and they're very stressed and it's quite a formal, you know, sterile environment and their pet may be sick. But actually, as soon as you start talking about the animal, people relax. It becomes this focal point of commonality. And and you can see how that happens. Is that what you experience in your work, your general work with pets as therapy?
Across the board, people just love being in the presence of an animal. You know, I know we're not going to go into great detail about the other settings, but you know, I've seen it working in hospitals, I've seen it working in care homes and schools and all sorts of places. But the common factor is that the dog is there. It doesn't care how you look at that moment in time, how you smell, how you speak, what you've done in the case of in prisons. As long as it's comfortable, it's been fed, it's had exercise, it's happy. And it's happy to share itself with you.
So I want to spend a bit of time talking about the pets themselves. What kind of pet is suitable for this work?
Oh, I love this question. Anything else outside of that is not really something that we concern ourselves with. We just want them to be happy, approachable, but not so happy that they're jumping up and not so shy that they're kind of cowering behind their owner's legs.
Okay, so how do you assess them then for prison work specifically?
It's actually a very similar process to the rest of our volunteers. The assessment is exactly the same. So we have a trained assessor. that essentially meets with the applicant and goes through a formal process of checking the animal's temperament. So there's a series of questions about how they behave in certain situations, with other dogs, with other humans, children. We see how they take a treat from an open palm. We're looking for it to be nice and gentle, no teeth used. We do a full body exam of the animal just to make sure that there's no sensitive areas that could be an issue. And we advise the applicant that should the dog get injured or have an operation or anything like that, that it's best to leave the visiting until the animal's fully recovered. We also check how they are on a lead. We want them ideally to be walking on a loose lead. We don't want them pulling, because obviously that's going to hinder a nice conversation that they might be having with whoever it is that they're interacting with. So there's a series of things that we go through, and it typically takes between about half an hour and three quarters of an hour, depending on how much chit chat you have with the applicant.
How many pets do you have actively working for you at Petsys Therapy?
At present, it's about 5,000 dogs across the UK, and approximately 60 cats. And for those who aren't aware, obviously it's a bit more difficult with cats because naturally they tend to be a bit more aloof. They certainly, generally speaking, don't like to be on a lead, which is a requirement of any pet animal. We need them on a lead so that they're consistently under control of their owner. And also cats tend not to like traveling, which is generally something that they have to be able to do to visit these establishments. So it's much more tricky. That being said, the pack cats that we do have, the ones that I've met, are just fantastic. And this is coming from a guy that's not naturally a cat lover. You know, they're more than happy to be stroked and cuddled and sit on somebody's lap. The majority of cats I've ever met outside of Petsys Therapy just scoot off. They're not interested.
So is it mainly dogs in the prison work that you do?
Yeah, as far as I know, it is all dogs that we have in the prisons.
And, you know, I did say that this is work for these animals, isn't it? But they have to enjoy it. So how do you position that? Are they working? Are they volunteering? What are they doing?
I think we class it as work time because it just differentiates between. So we put a 2-hour cap on any visit. Mm-hmm. So that's the maximum time that an animal can visit before it needs to have a total downtime away from interaction. And if you ever see a pat dog after it, it is noticeably more tired than when it started. I can't claim to understand the science behind it, but they are clearly giving something. They're giving an energy. I don't want to get down the lines of magic and all this, but they're clearly giving something across when they are being stroked and cuddled and patted. So they need to have that downtime just so that they can recoup and be a dog, not a working dog.
I think it's really interesting because we all know, don't we, if we are working all day and we're in meetings all day, or we're, you know, communicate, I know, you know, even as a vet, consulting all day can be quite exhausting, and you do need to take regular breaks. So it's just that interacting with people, isn't it, and communicating, it does take a lot out of you, especially when you want to be engaged and on form as well. So yeah, no, I agree with this, Matt. I appreciate the breaks that you give your pat dogs.
Oh, thank you.
I actually did. Rodney had his TV debut this weekend, and there was quite a heavy filming schedule. And inherently found that, you know, he needed to break every hour or so, because he's quite young as well. So yeah, he had lots of downtime, but it's very hard to rest a very enthusiastic 1-year-old terrier, because you know, wherever you put him, he's always finding something really interesting. Yeah. But yeah, by the end of the day, he was fairly knackered. So,
well, it's a bit like a toddler, really, isn't it? You know,
yeah,
they say, I'm not tired. You know, well, you are, I know you are. And as soon as you lie them down, they're asleep.
I just wanted to talk a little bit about the impacts of this work in the prison. What kind of feedback do you get from the prisoners?
So the feedback we've had from prisoners has been, well, often actually it's quite upsetting. So in a good way, though, in a positive way. So one piece of feedback I had was that they were scared about having Petsys Therapy dogs coming in because they thought it was going to make them really upset that they were missing their own pets. But given the choice of either having them or not having them, they said any day they would take the visits, even though it did make them miss their own animals. The other testimony I can think of straight off the top of my head was actually through the Lady Carol that I mentioned earlier. And she had a letter written by one of the inmates at that prison. And I can't remember the exact number of years, but he said something along the lines of, do you know what, in the visits that we have from the pat dogs that come into our prison, they've shown me more love than I've had in the rest of my life. And that, to me, is just the most upsetting thing. And if anyone had any shadow of doubt about what the prison environment is like and why some of these people are in there, you know, can you imagine never having had that love of a, you know, of a parent or a sibling or an aunt or an uncle, you know, literally just being left to your own devices, and all of a sudden a volunteer that comes in with a dog for an hour gives you more love than you had the rest of your life. That's pretty hard-hitting stuff.
It's so sad hearing that, but it's also really heartwarming to know that the person and the animal that have taken their time to do that work has had such a huge impact on somebody. It just really underlines how valuable, you know, this work is, doesn't it?
Really does. Yeah.
What kind of skills do you think can the pets that are going into prisons teach the residents on a practical basis? What kind of things do they get out of it?
So I think because obviously these are visiting animals, they're not resident animals, some of the scope is a bit more restricted. So what it does show them is how to interact with another living being. It shows them how to interact in a positive way with somebody that they're more used to seeing as in a position of authority. It teaches them how to interact with their peers within the prison setting, because often it's a group setting where the dogs are present. We do have some settings within the prison where the dogs are actually spending some one-to-one time with an inmate. And that's more because it might be a difficult conversation they need to have. It might be pre-parole hearing where they're very stressed. It might be that they're having a psychiatric review. So, you know, it can be used as a de-escalating tool. So there's a whole host of ways that the inmates get to interact with the dogs, but it has to be a positive way, because ultimately it's that officer's or that volunteer's pet, and their sole responsibility is for the welfare of that animal. So if they're ever in a situation where they feel, I don't like the way this is going, I don't like the way that the prisoner is interacting with me, They take them away.
Yeah. I mean, you've already referenced some really quite heartwarming stories about this work, but do you have any more kind of success stories about how the prisoners have been helped by the presence of pets?
Yeah, I mean, we've been lucky that we've actually done some filming within prisons, which is something I never thought that we'd get permission to do because of the security and the privacy side of things. And during those times, I actually got to spend some time just chit-chatting with the prisoners, you know, in between the actual filming schedule. And, you know, you get some characters, so we won't go there. But there were also some amazing guys that were telling me about their backgrounds with their animals. They didn't go into the, you know, the detail of why they were there, and just how grateful they are to have that time, because they don't feel within the prison environment that they get any real companionship. You know, they're having to watch their back, they're worried about, you know, maybe what's going into their food and all those kind of things that I think you mentioned earlier about what you see on TV. And of course there is an element of truth to that. I don't think it's as dramatic as we are led to believe, but there are some horrible things that go on. So for them to have that escapism they really value that. They're safe while they're with that volunteer and that dog.
Matt, you're obviously really passionate about this scheme. If you had unlimited resources, where would you take it? What could it do in the future?
Wow, Paul. I'm sure you've been put up to this by Claire, the CEO of Pets' Therapy. I think this is a question that I'm going to get in my annual review.
That's good practice then, isn't it?
Absolutely. Yeah, let's see if I can nail it. On a serious note, I think if there are so many prisons within the UK, and I would love to see the service within each and every one of them. I think at the moment we're in approximately 28 prisons. And there's no reason why it shouldn't be able to be included in more. I think it has to be a careful judgment, though, in the where it's utilised specifically within the prison. And so for that, you would ultimately rely on the expertise of the staff members within the prison about where you take the pet animals. And of course, it's where the owner, whether that be a staff member of the prison or a regular pet volunteer, where they are comfortable visiting, because there's a very different feel depending on where you go. The second thing I would love to see developed is we have a service called Read to Dogs outside of prisons, and that's aimed at helping children with literacy-based issues within generally the primary school setting. Now, many of the inmates within the prison setting don't have basic education. So if we're trying to rehabilitate and educate and provide these guys and ladies with skills, it seems logical that actually while the pat dogs are there, that they can help with that process. And especially, you know, to foster a love of reading, where they don't feel judged about how they pronounce a word or corrected. I just think that would be a fantastic use of time. And we have started having those conversations. So it'd be really good to see where that goes.
I think that's fascinating, and I definitely want to hear more about that. And we could probably talk all day about this stuff, Matt, but unfortunately, we have come to the end of our time.
Wow.
I'd just like to say thank you so much for coming today. I just loved hearing about all this work that's happening and all the good that it's doing. So thank you, and thanks to all your volunteer pets and volunteers that are doing this amazing work. Where can people get more information about Pets' Therapy, Matt?
Well, first of all, Paul, thank you. It's been a pleasure joining you today, and I hope people have learned something and enjoyed having a little listen. The best place to go if you would like to find out more about Pets' Therapy full stop is our website, which is petsastherapy.org. You can follow us on social media. All of the links, of course, on the website. Instagram is a lovely one because obviously there's lots of photos of lovely dogs and cats. That's the best way. If you've got specific questions, you can of course email us. The email is reception@petsastherapy.org, or you can give us a call.
What a great chat, and to hear that pets are going into prisons to help and rehabilitate people without any judgment, without any preconceived ideas. It's so pure, and I think it's one of the life lessons we all needed to learn today. I'm definitely considering Rodney as a Pets' Therapy dog after today's conversation. If you want any more information about Pets' Therapy, then please visit their website, Pets' Therapy. You've been listening to The Consult Room. I really hope you've enjoyed today's show. Please do subscribe, follow, or share this podcast. I'd love to hear your feedback. If you want to get in touch or collaborate, then do reach out to us at theconsultroom.co.uk or connect with me on social media as Dr. Paul the Vet or Dr. Paul Mantelope.